Officers ask Dana to come down to the Franklin station. They tell her she is free to leave at any time. They question her for 20 minutes in an unlocked room, and she admits she was at the scene. Nobody read her any rights at all. Is that admission out of the case? No, and most candidates get that wrong because they reach for Miranda the moment they see a police station. Miranda needs two things at once, custody and interrogation, and Dana had only one of them. By the end of this episode, you will run any interrogation fact pattern through three separate doctrines in order and know which remedy each one actually buys. Here is the root. First, the privilege against self-incrimination itself, because Miranda is only one tool that enforces it. Then, what triggers the warnings and what they must say. Then, invoking and waiving, which is where the exam lives. Then, the older voluntariness rule. And finally, the remedies, because which rule you broke decides what gets excluded. The Fifth Amendment says, "No person shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself." Three of those words are the whole test: compelled, witness, meaning testimony, and against you, in a criminal case. So the privilege applies only when three things line up at once: compelled, squeezed out by the force of the state; testimonial, a communication revealing the contents of the mind; and incriminating. Miss anyone, and the privilege does not apply, which is why the state can force you to give a blood sample. Compelled, yes. Incriminating, certainly. Testimonial, or not? Not. The body is the evidence, not your thoughts. So it can take blood, DNA, fingerprints, hair, and voice exemplars, and put you in a lineup. But it cannot make you answer, "Did you stab him?" That is all three. And the line is finer than it looks. Speaking words to show the physical quality of your voice is non-testimonial. Speaking them for their meaning is testimonial. Ask a suspect the date of his sixth birthday, and a wrong answer reveals the mind's impairment. The risk must be real and appreciable, though only a link in the chain, not a full confession. So the privilege dies once the danger is gone, after acquittal or conviction, after the limitations period runs, or when the government grants immunity. A Colombia grand jury subpoenas Ramos about a bribery ring. He asserts the privilege, and the prosecutor grants use and derivative use immunity. Now he must testify, and refusing means contempt. That promise, not to use his words or anything found because of them, is all the Constitution requires. Part 2. Questioning by officers in custody is so inherently coercive that the ordinary voluntariness test was judged not enough. The fix was a set of warnings, plus a rule that without them, statements from that setting are presumed compelled and kept out of the case. That is a prophylactic rule, a buffer rather than the right itself. And here is the single most important thing to memorize. Miranda applies only when two conditions are both present: custody and interrogation. No custody or no interrogation, and no warnings are needed at all. Custody means formal arrest, or restraint on freedom of movement to the degree associated with formal arrest. The test is objective. Would a reasonable person in the suspect's shoes have felt not free to end the questioning and leave, to the degree you would feel under arrest? The officer's private intentions do not control, so an ordinary traffic stop is generally not custody. Brief, public, familiar, and an officer may ask questions roadside without warnings. Two refinements. A child's age counts when the officer knows it, and an inmate is not automatically in custody just by being incarcerated. Interrogation is broader than asking questions. It includes any words or conduct police should know are reasonably likely to elicit an incriminating response. Three situations fall outside it: volunteered statements, routine booking questions, and the classic trap, an undercover officer or a planted informant the suspect does not know is police. Back to Dana. Told she could leave, questioned in an unlocked room. No custody, so no warnings. Now handcuff her, lock her in a cell, and let an undercover detective posing as a cellmate coax out the same admission. She is in custody. Warnings required or not? Not. She does not know her cellmate is police. Change it once more. She is handcuffed in the cell, and a uniformed officer asks, "Why did you do it?" Both boxes checked, custody plus interrogation, and without warnings, that answer is out of the prosecution's case. One exception lets police question in custody with no warnings and still use the answers. An objectively reasonable need to protect the police or the public from immediate danger. An officer who has just arrested an armed suspect and asks, "Where is the gun?" The answer and the gun both come in. Part 3. And it is short. Before custodial interrogation, police must convey 4 things. The right to remain silent, that anything you say can be used against you in court, the right to a lawyer present during questioning, and the right to a free lawyer if you cannot afford one. There is no magic script. The Constitution demands no precise wording, only that the warning reasonably conveys the substance. Nitpicking the exact phrasing is a distractor. Part 4. And this is where the exam lives. A suspect can give up these rights, but only by a waiver that is voluntary and knowing and intelligent, which the prosecution proves by a preponderance. It need not be signed or spoken. If he is warned, indicates he understands, and then answers, that conduct is an implied waiver, which produces a rule students find surprising. Staying quiet for a while is neither invoking nor waiving. But once he voluntarily starts answering, he has waived. And police need not tell him every crime they plan to ask about, or that a lawyer is trying to reach him. To shut questioning down by silence, the suspect must actually invoke, and unambiguously. Literally saying, "I am not going to talk." Sitting quietly is not an invocation. Once invoked, police must scrupulously honor it. But not forever. After a real break in time and fresh warnings, they may reapproach, even about a different crime. Asking for a lawyer is far more powerful, so the exam tests it hard. The request must be unambiguous. Maybe I should talk to a lawyer. Invocation or not? Not. Wishy-washy statements do not count, and questioning continues. But once a suspect clearly asks for counsel, the Edwards rule slams the door. All interrogation stops, and police may not reinitiate until counsel is present or the suspect himself restarts. It is stronger than the silence rule in 2 ways. It blocks questioning about every offense, and fresh warnings do not reopen it. The only escape is a break in custody of at least 14 days. Arrested for burglary in Olympia, Poe says, "I want a lawyer." Questioning stops. 2 hours later, different detectives give fresh warnings and ask about an unrelated arson. Improper. Now contrast. Had Poe said only, "I don't want to talk," that same gap and switch to the arson would likely be permissible. Same delay, opposite result. And keep the 2 counsel rights apart. The 5th Amendment right protects a suspect during custodial interrogation, does nothing until he invokes it, and once invoked, covers every crime. The 6th Amendment right attaches automatically at formal charging, but is offense-specific, so police may still ask about a different crime. And the 6th is violated by deliberate elicitation, which reaches the very informant Miranda ignores. Part 5. The oldest confession rule of all. Long before Miranda, courts refused coerced confessions because using them offends due process. The 14th Amendment for state cases, the 5th for federal. This rule is separate from Miranda and survives it. The question is whether the confession was the product of the suspect's own free and rational choice, or whether his will was overborne. Courts weigh the totality. On the police side, violence or threats, unbearably long questioning, denial of food, sleep, or a bathroom. On the suspect side, youth, low intelligence, mental illness, intoxication. Deception sits in the middle. Alone, it usually does not make a confession involuntary, and police may falsely claim a co-defendant already confessed. But deception paired with real coercion or with false promises of leniency can cross the line. Now the rule the exam loves most. Coercive police conduct is required. A mentally ill suspect walks into a station and confesses because inner voices command it, with no improper police pressure. That confession is voluntary and admissible. No coercive government conduct, no involuntariness. Part 6. The Remedies. And here, that word prophylactic pays off. What gets excluded depends on which rule was broken. A statement taken in violation of Miranda but still voluntary is kept out of the case in chief, and that is largely where exclusion stops. An involuntary confession breaks the Constitution itself. Keep the two tiers straight. A bare Miranda slip is leaky. Actual coercion is airtight. Three leaks worth memorizing. Impeachment, where an unwarned but voluntary statement may contradict a defendant who takes the stand, though never as proof of guilt. Physical fruits, where a gun found because of that statement still comes in. And a later warned confession, which an earlier unwarned admission does not automatically taint. With one limit on that third leak, if police deliberately question first to get a confession, then warn and have the suspect repeat it, the midstream warnings are ineffective and the repeated confession is suppressed. And 2 points on silence. Prosecutors may not impeach a defendant with silence he kept after the warnings because the warnings themselves invited him to stay quiet. Silence before any warnings can be used to impeach. An involuntary confession, by contrast, is excluded for all purposes. It cannot even impeach, and its fruits get full poisonous tree analysis. One wrinkle. Because Miranda is prophylactic rather than a freestanding right, a violation by itself supports no civil damages suit. The remedy is exclusion, not money. A word on authorities. This episode named 2, Miranda and the Edwards Rule, and both are names of rules rather than citations you will be asked to recite. The exam gives you a fast-moving interrogation and asks which doctrine the facts trigger and what gets excluded. If you keep only 3, keep these. Custody plus interrogation, both, or Miranda never starts. Compelled plus testimonial plus incriminating, all 3, or the privilege never applies. And the 2 clocks. Invoked silence reopens after a real break and fresh warnings. An invoked request for counsel does not, until counsel is present, the suspect restarts, or 14 days out of custody. Now the traps, straight from the examiner's favorites. 1. Confusing not free to leave with Miranda custody. A brief traffic or street stop restrains you, but it is not arrest-level custody. 2. Thinking Miranda covers all police questioning. It needs both custody and interrogation, so volunteered statements and non-custodial chats need no warnings. 3. Treating silence as an invocation. A suspect must clearly speak up, and a mushy, maybe I want a lawyer, does not trigger Edwards. 4. Mixing up the 2 counsel rights. The 5th must be invoked and then covers all crimes. The 6th attaches automatically at charging, but only for the charged offense. 5. Over-suppressing after a mere Miranda slip. An unwarned but voluntary statement can still impeach, and its physical fruits still come in. 6. Forgetting the state action rule. Without police coercion, a confession is voluntary, whatever the suspect's mental illness. 7. Assuming fresh warnings reopen questioning after a request for counsel. Time for the quick check, and this one comes straight from the Bargo question bank. Police question a suspect in custody about a jewelry store robbery without ever giving warnings, and he voluntarily admits he was at the store that night. The prosecution concedes it cannot use that statement in its case in chief. Then at trial, the defendant takes the stand and testifies he was nowhere near the store. The prosecutor now wants that unwarned statement in to contradict him. May the prosecution use it? Option 1. No, because a Miranda violation bars the statement for every purpose at trial. Option 2. Yes, because the violation was cured when the defendant took the stand. Option 3. Yes, because a voluntary, unwarned statement may impeach a defendant who testifies. Pause here if you want a moment. The answer is option 3. A statement taken in violation of Miranda but otherwise voluntary is out of the case in chief. Yet it may still contradict a defendant who takes the stand and testifies inconsistently with it. Miranda is a shield against conviction, not a sword to lie behind. Option 1 overstates the exclusion. Only an involuntary confession is barred for all purposes, and a mere Miranda defect leaves the impeachment door open. Option 2 reaches the right result by the wrong route. Taking the stand cures nothing. There are 30-plus more questions on this topic alone, each with every option explained like that. 5 things to take away. 1. The privilege needs compelled, testimonial, and incriminating, all 3, which is why blood, prints, and lineups are all fair game. 2. Miranda needs custody and interrogation, both, and either one alone means no warnings. 3. Invocation must be unambiguous, and silence is not an invocation. 4. 2 clocks. Invoked silence can be reopened after a real break and fresh warnings, even for a different crime. An invoked request for counsel bars reinitiation on any crime until counsel arrives, the suspect restarts, or 14 days out of custody. 5. Which rule broke decides the remedy. A Miranda slip still allows impeachment and fruits. Coercion is out for everything, which is why Dana's first admission stands and her last one falls on facts that barely moved. A room she could leave, then handcuffs and a uniform. Next time, Sixth Amendment counsel and trial rights. Practice this topic with more than 2,900 exam-style questions. Free to start at nextgenbargo.com. This episode is for education and exam preparation only, not legal advice, and we are not affiliated with or endorsed by the NCBE or any bar examining authority.